Hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be starting off what I think is going to be a wonderful symposium today, looking at how isotopes have helped us, or are helping us, figure out all sorts of things about soil organic matter. So today's work is work that I did as a postdoc with Margaret Torn at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. I am now currently a professor at Dartmouth College and looking for graduate students, so if you know of anyone, send them my way. Okay, so we all know soil organic matter is essential. We have extensively measured how much there is, where it is, how decomposable it is. We know it's essential that it provides nutrients, structure, decreases bulk density, retains water, and hugely it's been a carbon sink. So it's helped regulate our climate, taking CO2 out of the atmosphere. Well, indirectly, via plants. So we know all this, blah, blah, blah. But despite all of this knowledge, we are still not sure where it comes from? Wait, I know what you're saying. I know what the sources of soil organic matter are. We have leaf litter, roots, we have exudates from roots, dissolved organic matter leached from litter, there's the bodies of soil fauna and microbes. That's what makes up soil organic matter. We could also think about where it comes from in a slightly different way. So here we have a soil pit. We know in the soil pit that actually 35% of the carbon is stored below 20 centimeters. And so where is this carbon coming from in terms of, is it coming from above ground plant parts or is it coming from below ground plant parts like roots? So here we see we have this nice O horizon, we have all these roots. And so what are the relative contributions of above ground versus below ground plant parts? So here we have our little graphic again. So we have the leaf litter on top, and we have the roots in the soil. And so if your leaf litter, your carbon, organic matter, your carbon can be respired, retained in the O horizon, or transported to the mineral soil where it can be retained, respired, or transported further down. So that was how we'd have an above ground plant source contributing to mineral soil. If you're a root, you're already in the mineral soil, so you could be respired, retained in the mineral soil, or transported further down the soil profile. So these are the different pathways of sources of organic carbon. If we look at nitrogen, total soil nitrogen, it could be in the leaf litter. It's very similar, except we don't have the respiration losses, and we also have uptake by plant roots. But again, we have differences. The above ground plant parts have to be transported deeper in the soil, whereas the below ground plant parts, the roots, are decomposing in situ. They're already there. And why does this matter? Well, little changes to soil carbon can have big consequences. So there's this 4 per mil initiative that came out of the Paris Climate Agreement, or a adjacent session to it, that says if we just increased carbon by 4 per thousand a year, but we could basically ameliorate all of the CO2 that we put in the atmosphere by burning of fossil fuels. So this is really pie in the sky stuff, but if we do want to increase soil carbon storage and soil organic matter storage in soils, we do have to know where it's coming from. Should we manage for more above ground litter or more below ground litter? We also know that soil carbon becomes older with depth. So here we have depth. We have, this is hundreds of soil profiles from the radiocarbon database. And this is the delta 14C, so it's getting older, more negative, with depth. But we don't really know why soil carbon ages with depth. Is it due to long transport times of leaf litter carbon from the surface? So could it be explained just by transport of the organic carbon source? Or is it due to the inability of microbes to fully break down root material, or due to microbial decay products being absorbed onto minerals? And so to help understand this question, we need to know about transport and retention of different sources of organic matter. So the main question that I'm going to explore today is leaf litter or root litter the main source of mineral soil organic matter? And this question has been looked at, often in agricultural soils. So this is a really handy table that was put together by Rob Jackson's recent review. And so here we have below ground carbon inputs retained in soil organic matter and above ground inputs. So on average, below ground inputs, about 40% are retained in soil organic matter. And above ground inputs, about 7% are retained in soil organic matter. And the methods of these studies were quite variable. So we have, bare fallow plots, C3 to C4, actual in situ labeling of plants, all different methods. And the ratio of above ground, below ground to above ground is about between 5 and 8. So this seems to indicate that in agricultural systems, below ground plant litter is a more important source of soil organic matter. But what this fails to take into account are relative production rates. And so generally, above ground, there's more above ground production than below ground production. So if you normalize this ratio for input rate, it's more of about 2.4. But still, the roots are dominating. So that table and those numbers were all from experiments carried out in agricultural systems. And few studies have looked at relative contributions of above ground and below ground plant inputs in natural ecosystems, like forest or grasslands. So that's what I'll be presenting to you today. So I'll be presenting the results of 4 experiments from 2 field sites, and all of them used isotopes. So we grew labeled plant litter. This is the labeling chamber of the Firestone Lab at UC Berkeley. And in this picture, we're growing labeled Avena grass. So we add enriched CO2 into the chamber, so they have enriched C13, and we fertilize them with N15 enriched nitrogen. And we also, so then we can use the shoots and the roots for experiments. And also, ponderosa pine seedlings were labeled and in the same chamber, and we got labeled needles and roots from that. And so the 2 field sites are the Hopland grassland here in California and the Blodgett Forest in the foothills of the Sierra. So 2 very different ecosystems, but both in California, both have a Mediterranean climate where most of the rainfall is happening between November and April. And there's more rainfall in the forest, obviously, and it's a little warmer in the grassland on average. So I'm going to start talking about the different experiments now. For each experiment, I have this little icon up here. And the goal of that icon is to help you realize what the substrate is and then what element I'm looking at. So here for this experiment, we have just C13 labeled roots. And so these are at the grassland lysimeter facility in Hopland. And what these are is basically a series of trash cans. They're metal trash cans filled with soil. And beneath the trash can, there's a hole with a little spigot, and it empties into these carboys. So what's great about these is you can collect all the leachate that comes through these lysimeters to look at losses of dissolved organic matter. And so at this site, we inserted labeled root litter in the A or the B horizon. So I'll be showing results of the leachate. So all the graphs will have the percent of added carbon or nitrogen recovered on one axis. And then for this one, we have 2 of the first rainfall events that occurred after we placed the litter. And so one thing to note is that we have this big difference where most of the losses in leachate, most of the recovery occurred after the first rainfall event, and we had barely any recovery after the second rainfall event. So these leaching losses of dissolved organic carbon happen at the very beginning of decomposition. The other thing to note is that there's this large difference between horizon placement. So if we placed it in the B horizon, we recovered more than we placed in the A horizon, which is merely, it's only because the A horizon dissolved organic carbon had more soil to go through, so more of it was retained in the soil column, and the B horizon had less soil to go to get to the bottom of the lysimeter. But overall, the thing to note is that the percent of added carbon recovered is very small. It's less than 0.1% of what we added. So this implies that carbon is not efficiently transported through the soil. So for the next experiment, I wanted to look at sort of maximum leaching potential. And for this, I used, since we had a lot of it, labeled Avena shoots that were labeled with carbon and nitrogen. And I put them on top of cores from Blodgett Forest. So you don't see Avena litter at Blodgett Forest, but just as like a test of how much leaching we could get. So we had these 12, 15 centimeter deep cores. I kept them at room temperature, and over 2 months, I added either half a year's worth of precipitation or a full year's worth of precipitation to the top of them over 4 months. And then I collected the leachate and destructively harvested the cores in 2 centimeter increments. So we're still analyzing the data from this, but I do have the top 8 centimeters of the destructively harvested cores. So one thing to note is with the simulated leaching is that this is actually pretty realistic given that all of the rainfall in California happens in about 6 months. So here we're looking at the carbon, recovery of the carbon isotopes. So this is depth in the core and the percent of added carbon that was recovered. So one thing to note is that we have this exponential-like drop-off in recovery with depth, and that the amount of precipitation did not seem to matter. So half a year's worth of precipitation, we were able to recover the same amount as in 1 year's worth of precipitation, again implying that much of this leachate loss occurs early on in decomposition. So you could estimate that about 6% of applied carbon was recovered in the top 10 centimeters. Now for nitrogen, the graph looks really similar. We have this exponential decrease, and we have no differences among precipitation, but if we look at the percent of added nitrogen recovered, it's about 35% in the top 10 centimeters. So to me, this implies that surface litter may be a more important source of nitrogen to mineral soil than it is of carbon, and that there's definitely this decoupling between nitrogen and carbon in leaching losses. So for the third experiment, we put that carbon C13 labeled Avena litter at 3 depths in Blodgett. Again, we use this as a common substrate. Avena does not grow at Blodgett. And we had it at 3 depths, so 15, 50, and 90 centimeters. Here we have where we inserted the litter and then the controls. And we measured the recovery of this root carbon over 2.5 years below the insertion depth. So we looked at the recovery where we inserted, but also below to look at transport. And we did not find any of the root-derived carbon detected below the depth of insertion at any of the depths. It was not detectable. So what this implies to me is that as you go deeper in the soil profile, it seems that there's less and less movement of carbon. So for the last experiment, this is one you're probably familiar with. This is one that Jeff Bird started as a postdoc for Margaret in the early 2000s. And in this experiment, 2 litter types, ponderosa pine needles and roots, were inserted into the O and A horizons in these mesocosms, which were then put out in the forest to incubate. So we collected this 5 times over 10 years and measured the recovery of litter, nitrogen, and carbon at the placement depth and below. And so I'll be showing you data from needles placed in the O horizon and roots placed in the A horizon, which is where they would be decomposing in situ naturally. So for needle carbon, this is the percent that we recovered. This is time. And so surprisingly, we did see this increase. So I said leaching losses were greatest at first, but it does seem that as you have more decomposition, there is an increase in losses. And so I was showing you like the first part, and this is kind of has more of a biotic process included over 10 years. But the amount of O horizon needles that moved to the A was less than 3%. The amount of O horizon needles that moved to deeper in the A was less than 1%. So again, a very small amount of this needle carbon ended up in the mineral soil. For nitrogen, we have a similar pattern. But again, more nitrogen was recovered. So here we have 7.5% of the added nitrogen was recovered in 0 to 10, and then about 2% of the added nitrogen was recovered at 10 to 15 in the A. So again, we have a larger percentage of needle-derived nitrogen transported and retained than needle-derived carbon. So this is moving from the O horizon. So if we look at the root carbon, decomposing in situ, 40% of root carbon applied to the A horizon was retained in the A over 10 years. So that seems like a lot more of the carbon was being retained from the roots than from the above ground needles. And for nitrogen, over 70% of the applied root nitrogen remained in the A horizon over 10 years. So if we go back to our figure, we can kind of get a budget for sources of soil organic carbon. And by difference, we can estimate that about 76% was respired from the O horizon needles. 22.5% was retained in the O, and transported was greater than 2.2%. Of that, 1.7% was retained in the 0 to 10 of the mineral horizon, and another 0.5% was transported and retained deeper in the mineral horizon. And then for root carbon, about 57% was respired, and about 43% was retained. But of this, because we're interested in stabilization, about 4.3% was associated with minerals, and a 1% was transported deeper down and retained in a lower mineral horizon. So if we revisit these numbers with results from our experiment, we see that in the coniferous forest, about 44% of below ground carbon inputs are retained in soil organic matter. 3 to 6% of the above ground inputs are retained in soil organic matter, giving us a ratio of 14.7. But as I said, production input rates matter. So there are large differences in above ground versus below ground production rates. And also, what about long-term retention and mineral stabilization? So we can revisit this figure looking with a carbon budget. And litter fall is over 200 grams carbon per meter squared per year. So about 5 grams gets transported down, 4 of those get retained, and another 1 gram gets transported further into the mineral soil. Root production is much lower, it's 45 grams. And of that, we have about 21 grams being retained and about 0.5 gram being transported. So if we look at what's transported deeper down, we actually have more of the needle carbon being transported to deeper soil horizons than root carbon as a result of the greater production rate. Also, if we look at mineral association, we got 2 grams minerally associated with root production. And with the retention here, the C to N ratio is quite low, implying that this is likely minerally associated as well, what gets retained. So it seems that despite a much lower amount of the litter carbon, the leaf litter carbon, going to mineral soils, it might actually be more important for mineral stabilization, and more of it actually gets transported further in the soil. So implications for soil organic matter. A higher percentage of root production is retained in soils, but above ground litter may contribute more to mineral associated carbon and transported carbon, depending on its relative production rates. Surface litter contributes relatively more of its nitrogen than its carbon to mineral soil. And depth matters. We're likely to see more of surface litter-derived carbon nitrogen at the top of the mineral soil. So we did see transport from the O horizon into the A horizon 10 to 15. But remember, where I added the roots, we didn't see any transport to lower depth. So it seems that the efficiency of transport really declines as you go deeper in the soil profile, which is what I just said. So for next steps, we're looking at how fast does above ground litter carbon and nitrogen move down the soil profile using models. And so I've been working with Rose Abramoff to start this with models. This is just based off sort of an ideal soil. We'll then be applying it to the Blodgett soil. But what we see here, this is adding litter to the top of the soil, and this is adding DOC to the top of the soil. And if we look here, this value is equivalent to 0.1% of carbon recovered. So here we have about 2% within the first 100 days of litter carbon is in the top 20 centimeters of the A. And we have about 4% of litter DOC is in the top 40 centimeters within about 25 days. So we do have a sort of fast movement into the upper part of the mineral horizon. But if you wanted to look at really deep down, so if you try to see like where this labeled litter that you add, when it actually reaches 1 meter, it takes about 20 years for the litter carbon to reach 100 centimeters. And that's not like the peak amount, that's just like the first sort of front of it getting down. So this was done with a tough react model. So we're gonna be working on incorporating the data I showed you into this model to look at rates of transport and how long it would take for the litter carbon and nitrogen to end up in the deeper soil. And lastly, what I've really ignored are root exudates. So what percentage of these root exudates are actually retained in the soil and were transported to lower depths? So that's been ignored, and I think we could start using isotopes in creative ways to explore that question. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge everyone who helped out on this project and funding from the Department of Energy. Thank you.
Yeah. Representation. I guess at the end.
There might be more transport. It's possible. Yeah, so we just looked at the litter. So I think, yeah, the exudates are a huge sort of open question.
Are you starting to work on it?
I have plans. I have plans. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Is it? Okay.
Any of the literature you looked at before, or is you take into account the insects or earthworms or in the forest, there's a lot of work done with termites and earthworms. So the models incorporate this, but how do you feel this could change your whole interaction?
I meant to say the soils I was working with do not have earthworms nor a lot of bioturbation agents, and that would change things greatly. And as far as I know, the models are not including them right now. No.
Okay, I think we'll keep moving. Thank you, guys.